Welcome to I'm Spiritual, Dammit. I'm your host, Jennifer Weigel, and joining me today over the phone, very talented psychotherapist and psychic and medium, Vincent Jenna. Vincent, thanks for being on the show.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you for inviting me. It's so exciting to be here.
I really love people with many hats, right? And you wear many hats because not only are you trained to be a therapist, but you also have an antenna that not a lot of people have, in the sense that you can hear, see, speak, smell, your clairsentience, your clairaudience, your clairvoyance. There's a lot of clairs working for you, Vincent. So explain to the listener that's not familiar with you how the information comes through to you.
Oh, my goodness. Through Skype.
Oh, great.
No, I'm joking. I'm joking. That would be, I know that Apple is working on an application right now, Jennifer, to be able to connect your iPhone to the spirit world. That'll be so easy. Wouldn't that be great?
Wouldn't that be swell? No, then you guys would be
goodness.
So bored.
I know. No, we'd be able to. We'd be the connection. You'd need us as the app. That
Perfect.
Would be the only stipulation. Well, it's really interesting because I get that question all the time is what does it sound like? What does it feel like? And it's if you were to close your eyes and just envision your favorite television show and a scene from it and run it through your mind's eye, your imagination, run that scene through, you can see it while your eyes are closed. That's our brain's think in vision, in pictures, and that's what we call the mind's eye. And so through the mind's eye, I actually get a picture of the being, of the spirit that's communicating with me. So just like I can hear someone singing, or I just saw Beauty and the Beast, fabulous, I can replay the entire movie in my mind's eye, and the way I see, the way I feel it, the way I hear it is exactly how I hear and feel spirit. So it's not only just using my four senses, my fifth sense of feeling. I can feel them. They can touch me. I can also feel them emotionally. That's why I feel really blessed when I do this work, because I'm able to make them come alive by being able to present all of that to the person I'm making the connection for. It's a wonderful, wonderful experience.
Do you find, or did you find, when you were going through the world with this gift, was it a problem for you? Was it all through your childhood that you had this? Did you talk to your parents about it? Walk me through a little bit about growing up with this gift.
No, didn't grow up with it at all.
Okay.
And I'm actually jealous about that. I am envious of the people, even though I know that they've had so many problems, you know. I wish that I had walked into my bedroom and saw an angel sitting at the foot of my bed, or people were talking to me when I was younger.
Right.
I don't think I would have been picked on any more than I already was. I did have a lot of knowledge. My uncle used to call me the little professor. But Jennifer, it used to get me in trouble too. My mother used to beat me like you can't believe, because of all the times I would interject in an adult conversation as a little kid, and she was thoroughly embarrassed by that. I mean, I'm 62 years old, so I'm from a time where children were seen and not heard, and I was a talker. I got in trouble in school all the time for talking and disrupting the class, and I would get beat for that. So, no, I did not have an intuition. I just had an inner knowing. It wasn't until 28 years old that everything came a thrust upon me. And I say thrust like a tsunami, you know, a giant tidal wave. And it was all because I asked for the ability to be able to help a friend of mine whose life was falling apart, and I didn't know what to do. And I didn't know how to help him. And so I literally begged God for the ability to help this guy and people like him. I mean, I was a full-time actor back then. All I cared about was receiving an Academy Award, an Emmy, a Tony, some way or another with my singing, acting, and dancing, okay?
Right.
I had no interest in this whatsoever. As a matter of fact, all you people out there that are into this, I used to think were the kooky people, right? The kookies.
Yep.
And now underneath my business card, I've got title kooky person, you know, so yeah, I'm one of them. But back then I didn't know a psychic. That was Sister Sarah with the palm out in the highway in a little shack. You know, that's all I knew of this. And from asking for that guidance, within a couple of weeks, it was like a Steven Spielberg, Cecil B. DeMille movie, and all of this stuff started happening to me, all this paranormal stuff, and people trancing and voices coming out of nowhere and information coming to me and me seeing dead people and hearing other people's thoughts and all this wisdom and knowledge. So it was like an implosion. Mm-hmm. And we really didn't know, my wife and I didn't know what to do with it. She'd been with me, right now it's 44 years. So she was with me since I was 17 years old. So she knew I knew nothing about this stuff. And that's the only reason why she didn't have me locked up, is because she figured something was to it, because I didn't know it before, and now I know all this knowledge and all this wisdom.
Did it scare you or her? Did it scare either of you?
Where it scared the both of us is not knowing what I was supposed to do with this now. Mm-hmm. It's just like, so what are you telling me? Eventually I was guided to all these people, and they were telling me I'm supposed to be a spiritual teacher. I'm going to do all of these things. I'm going to be well-known. My message needs to be heard. And I'm like, what do I do with that? What do I do with that? I'm not Jesus. I mean, I love the stories of Jesus. I used to be the altar boy in the back of the sacristy that was drinking Jesus' blood and eating his body back there without anybody knowing it. You know, the wine and the host. I was one of those guys. But I had a very close relationship to God and Jesus, but not the way the priests were teaching him. I would argue with them and say, you're teaching them wrong.
Right.
I don't know why, but I used to watch all the movies, all the shows. Now when this was happening to me, I was like, well, what am I supposed to do with it? And it took me several years. I was training. I was researching. I was reading all the material I could, but I didn't know what to do with it.
When did it feel like, you know, part of your bones? When did it start to feel that you were giving information and you just, yeah?
Like part of my bones. That's the first time somebody has asked me that, and I've never really reflected upon that. It subtly became a part of our bones very early on. And now here's where I've got to say that this must have been part of my plan, because I married a Jewish woman and I was Roman Catholic. Mm-hmm. And back in little town in New York, Levittown and East Meadow, Jews and Catholics still did not marry back then.
Sure.
Okay. It was even hard for us to find a priest and a rabbi who were going to marry us. We finally did. But we knew for some reason we were meant to be together, and we never discussed our differences. We always discussed our similarities. Mm. So we didn't know we were taking a spiritual path that early on in our relationship at 16 and 17 years old. And as we continued, and then once this happened, it naturally fell into place on a spiritual level, because we really were loving the things that we were hearing, what was coming from me, for the further information we were researching and reading. So it was becoming part of us very early on. The part that I can say as far as me being a psychic and a medium, you know, I own it. It's me. But I don't question it any more than I question my singing ability. And so I don't know the date that transitioned like that. I started doing readings early on, part-time, but I was always counseling before that.
Sure.
You know, I was doing some type of spiritual counseling and motivating.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I think, you know, when about 5 years ago when I got my new business card and I put on it, you know, I'm going to call myself now a psychic medium, because that's what I am. And I don't care what anybody says about it. There's no other words. I'm not a transpersonal coach. I'm not an intuitive coach. I'm not an intuitive
life coach.
Guidance, whatever.
Yeah.
Life. I am a psychic medium. And so it was about 5 years that I at least owned the title.
Right.
But other than that, I kind of felt it grew into me by itself without me even knowing it.
And that's what's so cool. You know, I've interviewed a lot of people who come into this later in life. Some have been born with it since they were four. But Paul Selig, the channel and New York Times bestselling author, you know, professor at NYU for 25 years, he came into it late, just like you did when he said, I think I want to be opened up. God, open me up. And poof, he gets opened up. You know, Gail Thackray, healer, psychic, and medium, went to a, you know, how to be a psychic medium workshop in her 40s and went home and saw dead people in her living room. And she went back and said, hi, can you turn this off? Because I'm not quite sure how to work with this. You know, it's not like people. And then she figured
Gail.
It out.
I know Gail well, yeah.
So I love that this wasn't something that you planned on, right? You were going in one direction and it showed up in the other. But the great news is that you've embraced it and you're continuing to help people. And through all the readings that you've done and all the guidance you get from the other side, what do you think that you know for sure, Vincent, about the other side and spirit and our guidance? What do you think you really could kind of hang your hat on and say, yep, that's the truth?
Everything.
Yeah.
You know, it's so interesting, Gail, but Edgar Cayce said it. He listed five stages of knowing, mm-hmm. and the fifth stage is you know that you know.
Right.
And when it comes to not just the other side, but life, mm-hmm. why people are stopping themselves, why people aren't moving ahead and manifesting, I just know. And I got such great communication from the other side. And many of us will collaborate on that. And we feel the same exact message. Mm-hmm. You are not done when you leave here. The kingdom of heaven is within us. That's what we were told. That doesn't mean it's a place. Therefore, it is no better over there than it is over here. If we can't make it here, we're not going to make it there. That's why we keep coming back and forth and back and forth. Mm-hmm. We have to learn how to make heaven wherever we are. I mean, just think about this. You've got your parents. You've got loved ones. You've got not such loved ones. You've got perpetrators. Now they die and they go on the other side. And the only difference is they have no limitation over there and they see the big picture.
Right.
And they're over there and they're looking down and they're going, oh, my God, what the heck did I do? And that's one of the major reasons why they still come back to make this communication is to help us because they know they've done something to help hurt us here. And so they can't be 100% happy there, even though they know everything in the long run is going to be okay. But it's the interim and the suffering, especially with what's been going on today, that they hurt. They hurt, too. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody loves it. It became very glamorized when mediumship became popular over here in the United States and between the television shows. And, you know, and everybody is seeing that, and everybody is great about making the connections. But the one thing people are not understanding, why has it become such a need and obsession to speak to a loved one on the other side? And this is what I do know. It's because you're still wanting to know if that person loved you.
Right.
It's not about needing to know if they're doing okay. If you're believing in a medium, then you're believing in an afterlife. And most people don't believe that there is a hell and afterlife like Christianity believes. And so they know they're going to be okay on the other side. So why do they ask that question all the time? And I tell them, that's not the question you want to ask. Mm-hmm. You know the question you want to ask. What's the question you want to ask? I was a hospice social worker, which is unlike most of your mediums today.
Right.
So nobody worked with the dying as much as I had. So I have a lot of experience with that, and I have a lot of experience working with the caregivers of the dying.
Right.
And their biggest concern was that mom and dad were dying and they were losing the opportunity of finding out whether mom and dad really loved them. See, love is so strong and powerful, Jennifer. It carries you through grief. It allows you to let go. But when it's so necessary to still make that connection, you're wanting to know, was I a good boy? Was I a good girl? Did I do good for you?
Right.
Do you really love me? And it really, and they want to make that connection to you to let you know that because they know they didn't say it enough. They didn't make you feel loved enough. And they want to make it too. So that I know for sure is the major reason why there is such a movement towards all of this mediumship connection now.
It's true. And you talk a lot about self-love and the importance of self-love. Yeah. Because if we're not going to get it from mom or dad or the mailman or the dog or our spouse, we sure as heck better give it to ourselves, like the oxygen mask on the plane before it goes down, so we can help our small child. If we love ourselves,
That's so well said. Yes,
that's it.
Absolutely. It's all about self-love. Matter of fact, I have a workshop. It's called God, It's Not Working. Mm-hmm. And it's great. If any of the listeners go to my website, they can go to my music store, and they can find the disc there. I just wrote a book about it. And the whole reason, and I don't want to give away everything, but the whole reason why we can't make things work in our lives is because we really don't believe what we think we believe. It's because of a defense mechanism. It's because of the pains that we went through when we were younger, and we are harboring them in a certain part of our mind. And then there's defenses as we become older to hide those bad feelings so we don't feel bad about ourselves. So here we are thinking that we're acting normal and we're going through our lives, and yet we're manifesting beings, and we're not manifesting anything that we want. We're manifesting mostly what we don't want. We don't know why, and we end up saying, God, it's not working. Why isn't it working? I took the class. I read the book. Why isn't it working? And the bottom line is, it's because you don't believe what you think you believe. You are certainly not believing in yourself. Since I was so tormented in my youth, I was the one who was picked on as a little kid. Mm-hmm. I was beat up, chased by the kids at school every day, head shoved in locker, my head flushed in toilets, thrown in dumpsters. Then when I got home, because mom had been sexually molested until she was 13 years old by her brother and cousin, she had mental pathologies and obsessive compulsive disorder, panic disorder, major depressive disorder, and she used to take that out on my brother and me. So I used to get tormented at home.
Wow.
Not to mention, I was sexually molested. I was molested by the parish priest besides a babysitter until I was 13 years old. I know what it is not to believe in yourself, and I know how that gets in the way. And mine is maybe an extreme story. There's even stories more extreme than mine. Whatever level of the story, we lose our self-love from the first moment we hear any unconscious or conscious negative message. And that John Gray wrote, Dr. John Gray, who wrote Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus.
Mm-hmm.
Right. His first book is, that's exactly what he says. We lose our self-love from the first negative comment we receive from our environment, no matter where it comes from.
True.
And so there's nobody on the earth today that loves themselves enough. Otherwise, you wouldn't see the earth the way it is.
And the grief that compounds with the, am I good enough, mom and dad? You know, one of the things that I learned in this last journey of writing my latest book, Carolyn Mace said to me, grief is debilitating. And if you can't move through grief, you can't get anywhere. But a lot of the grief is caused, and your message is this, by not loving yourself, because we can't depend on everyone else to fill those holes, or the drugs, or the shopping, or the chocolate, or the sex, or whatever it is we're trying to get to fill those holes. We have to fill it with our own heart and spirit. And with
our own heart, yes,
mm-hmm.
Yes. Carolyn Miss was very profound in that. I had a chance of meeting her too. And the whole idea of what she's talking about is, there is normal grief. You know, anytime you lose something, you're going to miss it.
Right.
So there's a normal amount of that loss feeling you're going to experience. And as a hospice social worker, I did a lot of grief counseling, and we allow ourselves to grieve. Mm-hmm. However, when it goes beyond that normal grief into 15 years, and it doesn't even have to be that long, of that loss feeling, if you're no longer grieving the loss of the loved one, again, you're grieving the opportunity of finding out you were loved by somebody who is very important in your life. That's what you're grieving.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why the grief can stay with you, and why it's so debilitating, because it's showing you still need that. You haven't fulfilled that yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But you can only, when your needs are not met as a child, and there is a certain period of time that it just, and here's the proof of this with our English language. If a child does not learn English, to speak English, in an English-speaking family, mm-hmm. by the time he or she is 9 years old, if he doesn't hear it frequently when they're 9 years old, they then have to learn it as if they're learning a foreign language.
Mm.
So learning that you're lovable, learning that language comes naturally if you are attended to the right way, right?
Right. Sure.
When you pass that certain point and you're not receiving it the right way, then you have to learn it. And the only way you learn it is by teaching it to yourself. No outside force from that point on. No husband, no puppy, no sister, no brother, no best friend, no soulmate. Mm-hmm. No one can teach you self-love, because the word is self, except you. The two things you learn from your parents, and there's only two.
Mm-hmm.
The rest you learn from the world. The two most important things is whether you're lovable and how to love yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And that how to love yourself is a pattern. And so the way you wind up treating yourself is the way you were treated. And whether you were lovable or not is determined by how you were treated.
That's exactly
and
right.
And once that is lacking, you got to do it all yourself.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is that it's a lot of work, but boy, it's worth looking under the hood. I have somebody that I know very dearly who has a very verbally abusive mother. And so she wonders why she gets into these relationships that are verbally abusive. And it's because that's the only example she had of what, quote, love is.
Yes.
Yeah.
There is a psychological study out there, and this is really where doctors and the sciences are looking into the metaphysical world more because of studies like this.
Mm-hmm.
For example, a woman who has been physically abused by her father growing up, 90% of those women attract males who are going to physically abuse them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how does that work? They certainly are not at a party and there's 10 guys there and one guy has a sign on his head, date me in 3 months, I'm going to punch you in the face.
Right.
No. It's an energy thing, and the energy is the woman believes she picked up two messages. One, I must deserve mm-hmm. to be beaten.
Yep.
And two, like I said, how to love yourself. So she only knows abuse mm-hmm. as a means of attending to herself. So that energy now goes out into the universe. So when she is at a party, and there could be 20 single perfect guys there, and one guy who's going to be the abuser, well, the energy likes attracts like, and mm-hmm. the only way a man can abuse a woman is because he doesn't love himself,
yep.
and it's coming out in his physical abuse. And so their energies meet. Out of all the people, those are the two eyes that make contact and then go into a relationship, and then months down the line, he winds up physically abusing her. So it's all based on energy, and it's all based on beliefs. It can't be based on anything else, and that's what really confounds the psychologist, is how does that work if they're not talking to each other and giving clues of their backgrounds first? It's an energy thing,
yeah.
and it's a belief system. So, yes, if you believe you deserve that, if you don't believe you're lovable, you're going to maybe try to attract somebody in your life, but it's going to fall apart. It's going to break apart. It's going to be sabotaged in some way.
You know, in all of your experience, I've also seen you talk about people's past lives. They come up sometimes if it's relevant for someone's life challenge, right? If they're having a persistent
yes.
life challenge, it might be a past life pattern that you see. Talk to the listeners a little bit about how that works when that comes up for you. It's obviously important information that needs to be related to your client or to who's sitting in front of you. But for those who've never had that experience, can you talk about that a little bit?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Just like you're an accumulation of this entire lifetime and all of the experiences you've been through, even in utero, from that point on, you've been affected. Well, you're an accumulation of all your lifetime. So what will happen is when a person's sitting in front of me and I see that there is a repeated pattern or issue, she's having a hard time maintaining a relationship, or it's a guy, and he's like, he loses every single relationship that he ever makes, whether it be friends, it starts out on fire and great, and then for some reason they leave him. They either move, they die, they dump him,
mm-hmm.
right? And so I go into and I see right away, wow, man, I hate to tell you this, but I know exactly the reason why you're experiencing this. You committed suicide in the past life.
Mm-hmm.
And because you did that, you set up a karma for yourself and you feel so bad about it, you chose to come into this lifetime to make up for it by having a people abandon you now. Mm-hmm. Because when you committed suicide, you literally threw off every person's karma that you had an arrangement with before you incarnated on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see those lifetimes, or I can see patterns of people being strong and dominant personality styles, and because they were leaders in a past life and they liked that lifetime. There's a problem with that, though. Karma, first of all, is a principle. It's not a law. People tend to think that karma is a law. Yes, there are times what goes round comes round. It will happen that way, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we don't have to put ourselves through something in order to make up for a low choice we made in a past life.
Sure.
There is a concept of restitution. If we know we made a low choice, then that's all we need to do. We don't have to put ourselves through hell. But people will actually choose in a lifetime to try to make up for a past lifetime, to try to correct it, to try to do something about it. And they actually risk the chance of perpetuating the same mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, you couldn't get along with somebody in a past lifetime. You had a bad relationship with them. Well, we're not allowed any negative feelings. In order to stay in that oneness and share our lives with everybody else, you have to be pretty balanced out. So if you're feeling bad about something, you got to take care of it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you had a bad relationship with somebody in a past lifetime, chances are you will come back into this lifetime with that person, maybe in another role. Maybe it was a sibling relationship or a husband and a wife relationship. And in this relationship, you'll come back as a father and a daughter, a mother and a son, whatever, to try to fix it. And you actually risk the chance of ruining the relationship in this lifetime for the exact same reason it was ruined in that lifetime. And it perpetuates the problem. And I see that today so many times. I'm like, oh, my gosh, you came back again in this lifetime. You were brothers and sisters in that lifetime. I'm seeing all this sibling rivalry. You didn't get along. So in this lifetime, you came back and decided to marry the person instead. I guarantee you, the both of you are extremely competitive, and you act more like brothers and sisters than you act like lovers. Is that correct? Yes, I can't believe you just said that. Yeah, absolutely. That's what you did.
Mm-hmm.
No wonder why you're breaking apart, because
right.
You're trying to fix something that you didn't need to fix.
Right. And then if we don't tend to it, we get recycled again until we do. I mean, we keep running away from problems. I say we, the collective we, many people often will, quit a job because the boss is just too toxic. But maybe that boss was put in your path so that you could face a fear that you have of defending yourself and standing up for what you believe in.
Right. Standing up. You may have, you see, and the other part is when you say was put in your life.
Mm-hmm.
You may have asked that person, that soul, to come into your life this time and be a toxic boss to help you get to the point of standing up. And here's an example of that. I know for a fact that I made a soul contract with my mother.
Mm-hmm.
And before she was going to be my mother, it's just a soul. And I said, listen, I need to go down there. I want to be a spiritual teacher this lifetime around. But in order for me to get to where I want to be, I'm going to have to go through a lot of different pains and hurts so that I can relate to others and others can relate to me. Will you go down and be my mom this time around? But instead of being a nurturing, loving mom, could you be an abusive mom to me? And what people don't realize, some of these soul contracts, Jennifer, that the reason why the souls will choose that is because they love us so much and because they want to help us so much. So I know that all the characters in my life that abused me, they made that a contract with me because I asked them to do that. It was a dumbass request, and we have to learn to stop asking that. But we do that. We will ask a soul to come in and be our mean boss or to be our mean mom and dad or to be our abusive spouse so that we can get to where we want to be. We do that when we're on the side that's so unlimited over there, you know? We make dopey choices over here to tax us with learning lessons in the living.
Right.
You know, can you imagine when we feel unlimited on that side to some of the choices we would make, mm-hmm. thinking that we're gung-ho, I'll make it through life, and oh my gosh, I'm going to advance so much, so please go down and abuse me, okay?
Right.
Now, that doesn't mean that I'm not giving excuses for abuse.
No.
Okay, we still have to stop it. That's part of our learning and growth, is stopping all of that.
Sometimes people experience it so that they can be an advocate for, yes. you know, against it. Right.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, exactly. Right. And we will choose that too. So that's why we want to let go of the pains that we've been through, because you have no idea if you really set that up yourself, mm-hmm. or because there is no such thing as victimization. Right. Nobody is a victim. We manifest everything. So we either manifest it because we were off the path, or we manifest it because we had planned on it to start with.
Okay, that's a really important point, because I was on the phone with somebody who said, they made me feel so bad because I ruined their vacation, and they made my vacation miserable, or this person made. Nobody makes you do anything or feel anything. That is our choice, correct?
That is absolutely 100%. A matter of fact, it's scientific.
Mm-hmm.
Your feelings are controlled by your thoughts, but they have to be your thoughts, not somebody else's words.
Okay.
So what people don't understand is, like, you got a person who stands in front of you, turns around and says, this is all your fault. That is not what hurt you. What hurts you is the thought that transpires automatically between the words he said and your feelings. There was something else in there first. For example, Jennifer, I have no idea who you are, but if I turned around and I started criticizing you, and I was picking all of these characteristics that were completely opposite of who you were, you're a stupid man who is a small person and 1,000 pounds, and you don't have any worth in life.
Right.
You would look at me and you would laugh, going, you're ridiculous, because first of all, I'm a woman, not a man, right? So things that we know are not true don't bother us.
Right.
The only things that bother us are things deep down inside of us that we believe are true.
Or that we're afraid are true, right?
That's right. So mm-hmm. when the person feels, I can't believe he made me feel it was my fault, mm-hmm. that means deep down the little child within that person somewhere along the line was blamed when they were growing up for somebody's being upset. Look at what you did. You made your mom upset. You made your dad upset, right?
Right.
And she probably was nailed over the head with that over and over and over again. And so now all of a sudden somebody winds up saying something or acting in a way, it pushes her button, and in her mind quickly goes by, this is your fault. I can't believe you messed up again.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then the defense mechanism comes out and says, I can't believe he made me feel that way.
Right.
That's a defense mechanism, when truly the real belief that person has is it must have been my fault.
Sure. Sure. And anything that's not healed, it'll take us to DEFCON
right.
5 if we haven't done the work
exactly.
on ourselves.
It, totally.
Okay.
That's right.
All righty. Now, Saturday, on April 8th, you're going to be speaking at the Chicago International Association for Near-Death Studies, which is a wonderful organization that's held at Evanston Hospital, started by Diane Willis, when she herself had a near-death experience and decided her goal was to make people not afraid of death. So you,
right.
I know you believe not to be afraid of death, but for those who are still afraid, I mean, even Diane talks about this, is that the remembering when she was in her near-death experience of the unconditional love that is available to all of us when we do get over there as opposed to over here. What message for those who can't make it to Evanston Hospital, which they should, by the way, 2 p.m. on Saturday, but if they can't physically get there, what can they do to help remember without actually going there? What physically, literally, like, you know, without dying by Saturday, what can they do to remember the grace that's always available to us?
Well, it's going to be hard to actually remember it.
Mm-hmm.
What you're trying to do is wake it up inside of you. The knowledge is in there, but it's going to require faith in order to believe in it. So one of the first things I say to people is read and expand your belief systems. You've got to expand your belief systems. If you keep them limited to this mundane world and this physical world, you're going to be doing a lot of suffering. Again, I was a hospice social worker, and one major thing that I learned from the dying is you will die the way you live.
Yeah.
And you don't have to worry about anything, not even about whether there's life after death, but how you're going to die if you expand your belief systems. Mm-hmm. And just read, read, read. There are such incredible stories out there that are real, that are true. I forgot the name of the book. I have it.
You mentioned Edgar Cayce. I mean, this is not new.
There's Edgar Cayce material on it, but I'm talking about there is the most documented past life recall is from this child in this lifetime who recalled all the details of being a fighter pilot
in Japan,
in World War
II.
Yes, mm-hmm. Japan, absolutely. And so when you read things like that and you can understand that there are past lives, then you start expanding your beliefs. But here's really the bottom line, again, Jennifer, to all of this. Mm-hmm. If you don't believe in yourself, I keep bringing it back to that. Right. If you don't believe that you're a divine being, if you don't believe you're special, if you are that you are unlimited, then you're not going to believe in anything else. It doesn't matter what you read at that point. Mm-hmm. You have to believe you have value. You have to believe you have worth. You have to define some type of power or source. You just can't claim to be an agnostic and an atheist and then expect your life to be fulfilled and not have any fears. You've got to define something that helps to fulfill you on a daily basis. Reading somebody else's stories can definitely help, but putting things into practice, when you start putting into practice the law of attraction and manifesting, you start getting validation to all of this. You start hearing from the other side, from higher-ups, from the guides, from ascended masters, from the God source. Mm-hmm. You've got all of that connection 24/7. You don't need, and just this is for all people who, whether they've had a near-death experience or those who haven't, the only reason why people have had a near-death experience is because they needed to be shaken by the shoulders to get onto their path.
Mm-hmm.
That's the reason why they had it. You do not need to be shaken by the shoulders to start opening up your faith and your belief systems. And that's how you begin to wake things up, is you've got to change the beliefs and feed the beliefs in order to open the doors. And you can begin to live a life that is not just day to day, whatever happens, happens. You're going to happen to life rather than life happening to you.
Mm-hmm. And there it is. No victim. You are in control. When I say this to people, that everything in their life was actually a co-creation of a belief system inside, they just look at me like, you've got to be kidding. I did not choose to have a flood. I did not choose to have my dad die or my husband leave me or my blah, blah, blah. But I got news for you. If you have a belief system running inside of you that is absolutely terrified that your husband's going to cheat on you, guess whose husband is going to cheat on you?
Not only that. Okay, mm-hmm. We are together, Jennifer, to learn about ourselves, not the other person. The way we were created is, right, the way the God source created us was actually by becoming us. So that's what was meant by we're created in its image. We have everything and all the knowledge that it has, we have. That's the only reason why we're here to experience it. Mm-hmm. And the way you get to experience the depth of you is by an intimate relationship. So therefore, everything that goes on in that relationship from the other person, you is a manifestation also of what's going on inside of you. If your husband is having an affair on you, it's because you're also having an affair on yourself. Because you've got the intuitive side of you that's been trying to talk with you that you're supposed to have a marriage with and a relationship with, and instead you're ignoring that and you're having an affair with the human side of you, and you're listening to just the human side of you. So if you are abusive to yourself, you're going to manifest it in abusive relationship. Mm-hmm. So everything. So yes, that flood, if you're in the wrong place at the wrong time, yes, that flood is going to wind up hitting you if you didn't listen to the message. You manifested that. And we do, there's a certain amount of things on the earth that happen by itself, but we feed into the rest of the traumas and the crises that go on here. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that you have to be in the midst of it. You don't have to be in the midst of it. And first of all, when your father dies, it's your father that's dying, not you. You didn't know, you did not manifest his death, but you did choose to be his daughter or his son.
Right.
So you're going to experience it. If he's not doing what he needs to do, you're going to wind up experiencing that. And when you're a child, when you come into this world, yes, you're dependent upon these parents helping your karma and your path that you've chosen, like I said, to come to fruition. You're depending upon them to help you with this. And most of it, you already knew what was going to happen. And you did choose that. So, no, you're not a victim to anything except actually yourself.
Question. I have a friend whose wife died very suddenly because a microburst storm showed up out of nowhere, hit a tree, and it hit her on her bike and she died. Was that a random? It was terrible. Was that random chaos?
No, there's nothing random. Yeah. You see, here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing, that word random is perfect. Nothing, all science has shown there is nothing on the earth that happens randomly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Nothing. Everything is in perfect order and happens for specific reasons, right?
Okay.
We're there,
mm-hmm.
okay? And, I mean, life is there. Our bodies all work in perfect order. The only thing that can throw us out of order is the thinking. Now, here is what people need to understand, and especially today.
Mm-hmm.
When we incarnate on Earth, because of all of the lower choices we made in past lives,
mm-hmm.
we actually will decide, all right, I want to go down there and I would love to live in my 80s. I think that'll be great, but I'm going to have a couple of out clauses just in case.
Mm-hmm.
These spontaneous random deaths are nothing more than out clauses. They're people going their way through life and going, you know what? It's not going the way I planned. I want to get out of here before I mess it up too much.
Or could it be that I'm going to help somebody evolve greatly by stepping out now suddenly?
That's a choice.
Right, right.
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
That would be part of a plan.
Mm-hmm.
For example, children who come into the world disabled or dying young,
mm-hmm.
part of their plan was to be able to help their parents on a spiritual journey in some way.
Got it.
Okay, and so yes, by me leaving, and I'll share a personal story. My sister-in-law's husband died just recently. He's young, and he died recently to give her a chance to live a better life and open the pathway to her. And everything he went through was to bring her, because she had been abused. My in-laws were divorced very young, so she never experienced a father. Now she's experiencing the best time of her life and the best part of her life.
Mm.
Even is going to be able to experience unconditional love, and that's because the husband left. He was not able to take care of things in his life, and I believe he had an out clause too, and he took it. Rather than to stay and to hurt more and to hurt more people, he decided to leave. He was a very negative person. So we do experience those things. So the aneurysms,
sure.
the people dying in their sleep. And nowadays, Jennifer, I think a lot of people are leaving because they don't like the way the world is going to. That's part of the formula also, and they want out of here.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like the Left Behind stories.
Mm-hmm.
They were all written for a reason, and people are ousting. They're just, you know, looking at this and going, I got to get out of here some way or another, and boom, they die. And we do. If we're unhappy, we're not achieving anything, we have all this physical illness, we would commit unconscious suicide, but it's a suicide still, and set ourselves up to be able to leave. So, yeah, I know it's hard, and it's hard for the survivors, but it's no victimization, and nothing happens by chance.
Is this part of the branch points that a lot of the people who've died and lived to come back to talk about, where we have several possible exit points, like you say, where we can, quote, check out
yes.
before our designated, you know, time of death in our 80s?
All called all different
mm-hmm.
things.
Sure.
I call them
okay.
checkup points.
Perfect.
Branch points.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. It's all the same thing.
Okay.
Everything is about evolving.
Right.
Everything is about evolving. We think it's about being able to save up enough money to buy a beautiful home, you know?
Mm-hmm.
We think it's about getting married and having children. That's just part of the experience to help us evolve. But the whole point is about evolving. And no matter what we need to do, I'll give you a very small example about that. My son was, when he was from a toddler on up, he was so fascinated with fire. Okay, and we used to have a fireplace, and it kind of concerned my wife and I, because every time I start a barbecue, he'd come running over, and I always had to worry about him,
sure.
And over by the stove. So what I did one day is I took a match, I lit it, I blew it out, and before it wasn't like burning hot, but it was hot enough, I touched it to his fingertip. Because I wanted him to know what fire could feel like, and it could be worse than that. So he was like an ouchie, but of course it didn't leave a mark or anything.
Sure.
So I was willing to cause him some discomfort to keep him from going near fire again that much, because he could really be hurt if for some reason we weren't watching anything, right? A babysitter. If I did that as a father in the physical life, what do you think we'd set up for ourselves while we're in the spiritual realm and we feel unlimited again, just so that we can learn and grow and know who we are? We'd set up a whole bunch of stuff.
Right.
And so it's not about the successes that we go through here. It's about experiencing ourselves in any which way we want to know who we are. And that may mean to be a survivor. It may mean to survive your alcoholic parents. Mm-hmm. It may mean to be a hero. It may mean to be a teacher. It may mean to be able to leave here earlier, but knowing that everything is going to be okay. It may mean a lot of things, but all we care about is to evolve to our highest being, because it's so magnificent and exhilarating.
Well, for those who are listening, and if it's before April 6th, you're fortunate because you have an opportunity to see Vincent. I'm going to be interviewing Vincent at the Wilmette Theater for Conversations with Weigel Thursday, April 6th. We're going to start things off at 7 o'clock with a conversation, and then Vincent is going to show the room how he connects to spirit and give messages to the room as they are guided. And it's going to be a wonderful experience. And for more information on that, you can go to Vincent's website or mine. Vincent Genna is spelled VincentGenna.com. You can go on there and find all sorts of stuff, from clips to the store to all these things, like you talked about, the classes and insights on Vincent. And my website is jenweigel.com, JenWeigel.com. Click on gigs and you can find out more about that. And then again, as we mentioned earlier, Saturday afternoon at Chicago Ions at Evanston Hospital, Vincent will be talking as well. So we're really grateful to be having you for a double whammy this weekend, Vincent. It's going to be very special for those who get to see you and experience what you do. I'm just so grateful for the time you've given us in this conversation and for all the work that you're putting out there. It's really important.
Oh, well, thank you for inviting me. And I have to tell you, it's just as exciting for me to be meeting all of these people and connecting, because they just open up their hearts and their souls to me, which takes us on a whole different level. So we always leave, people leave my events feeling loved, feeling empowered, feeling energetic, excited, inspired. And that's my major goal. I want to empower everybody so that they can create the lives they want.
Well, the world needs more people like Vincent Genna. That's all I'm saying. There's my T-shirt.
Thank you. And Jennifer to get us out there.
Okay, cool. We'll be a team. Awesome.
Definitely.
Yay. Vincent, I so look forward to Thursday, and thank you for being spiritual, damn it. We will stay in touch.
Same here. Absolutely, Jen. You take care.
Okay, you too.